Welcome to Mission Peak. We hope you enjoy this recording of our service, and we hope to see you on Sunday morning. Thanks for listening.
Whoever you are and wherever you are on life's journey, you are most welcome here. Welcome, everybody. It's wonderful to see you this Sunday morning after the rain fell. And man, that was some overdue rain, wasn't it? My name is Reverend Jeremy Nickel. I'm the minister here at Mission Peak. And welcome back all our friends and members. We have a few little items that I go over with here at the beginning of the service. We have a guest sign-in in the back, so if you've been hanging out a little while and you'd like to tell us a little bit more about who you are so we can tell you a little bit more about us, that would be great. There's also a worship diary back there. Sometimes something in the service just like really works, you know, it just was what you were waiting for. We'd love to know about that. Conversely, sometimes, you know, you finally found that piece that you've been looking for all week and then bam, somehow we took you out of it. So we want to know about that too. So if there's something that's worth remarking on, please let us know. And as I've said in the past, we really do look at that stuff. It doesn't just get thrown out after the service. Every couple months, all the worship team gets together, and we read through that whole diary, and we get a lot of really helpful information from it. So just please know that is there. There are also some printed announcements for you to take a look at. We have our Black and White Gala coming up, which is really a big part of the life of this community. There's a lot of ways to be involved beforehand in terms of setup and planning. We ask that people who have creative ideas for ways to gather people through the year, that this is a good time to get those on the list. So if you want to have like some kind of themed dinner and invite 8 people from here, well, you can put that on the auction and people will actually pay to come to your house and join in on that fun. And it all goes to helping run this place. So take a look. There'll be some lovely volunteers out at the tables after the service to talk about the Black and White. We're also looking for some more people for the Sunday Services Committee, so really great entry kind of volunteer opportunity here, help set up, you know, there's a bunch of energy and it's fun, you know, to come here early on Sunday and help us get set up or take down, do aesthetics. We're also still looking for a couple teachers for our RE, for our religious education for our kids, so if that's something you've always been curious about, please speak to Natalie or our DRE, Lane Young, who's actually on her Sunday off, but Natalie, I know, is here today, so you can speak to her or myself if you're interested in doing some teaching. And it says on here still that Peak Rocks is looking for a drummer, but I'm happy to say they have found a drummer, and in fact will be bringing us their musical gifts next Sunday, so you can look forward to that. And some other ongoing activities on the back, so please take a look at that. One little change that we're going to have starting this Sunday is during Joys and Concerns, we're going to have a candle up here that's going to be what I'm calling our candle of interconnection. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world that we want to bring in here, like what's going on still in Nairobi right now, that might not be something that actually happened to you this week, and we want to have a good space to bring those concerns and those ideas into this room. So before we get to our standing up, we're going to have a minute of silence where I'll light this candle and people can just kind of speak into the silence anywhere around the world or whatever's on their heart that they want to bring into this room. So that'll be something we'll do later. A beautiful thing happened yesterday in a garden not too far from here. You might have noticed, as I mentioned, it rained a little bit yesterday. Well, Bruce and Lorna, two of our beloveds, were getting married yesterday at 3:00 in the Leaf Garden in Niles, which if you've never been there before, is just a lovely place, and it was even more lovely yesterday. And the weather played along. It was still raining a little bit when we started that service, but as they were introduced as husband and wife, I mean, the lights turned on, the sun just shone on them. Clearly, the universe blessed that union in just the most incredible way. So I insisted that they did not come here this Sunday. They were going to start a little honeymoon, but the next time you see them, please share your excitement with them. One final announcement. One of the really wonderful programs that the UUA has developed for our youth is OWL, Our Whole Lives, and it's a really comprehensive sex ed curriculum that has age-appropriate lessons for wherever age your child is. The biggest part of that lesson is for 7th through 9th graders. And so this year we'll be having the OWL program for the 7th and 9th graders. If you're a parent of a child around that age and you're considering putting them in that program, down at the San Jose congregation at 2 p.m. today, they're going to have a program where you can come and just learn more about what that's going to be all about, so you can take a look at it as a parent first before you make the decision if you want to put your child in it. I will just say, as a child growing up in a Unitarian Universalist congregation myself, I went through this program, and it was incredibly equipping for my whole life. It was just one of the most important things I've been through. So if you have questions, please go look at that. Both Steve Wallcave and Michelle Havenhill are kind of our point people for that. So if you have questions about that, if you can't make it to the meeting, you can check in with them. There's also some information in the Week on the Peak about it. There's Steve right there. So if you're a parent with some questions about that, you can check in with him. And please do. I really can't say enough good things about that program. And with all that being said, I'm going to turn things over to Pat to get us started musically. Thank you. Thank you, Pat. Please join me in today's invocation. It is, once again, our mission statement projected behind me. I'll read the first piece bold, and you can follow me from there. The foundation of Mission Peak is love.
We are a spiritual community of open minds, nurturing growth and healing in ourselves and all people.
Together we strive to live compassionately and courageously.
As we work for a nonviolent, just, and sustainable world.
Does anyone have it memorized yet? Because I have a special prize for the first person who comes up to me and just nails it without looking at anything. So let me know when you're ready. With that being said, please rise in body or spirit and join me in our first hymn. It's number 395, and it's going to be around, so we're going to be led in this one, and I'm going to turn it over to our leaders.
First of all, you do not need your hymnal. You can put your hymnal down. I will teach it to you, and you will know it. Okay? It's in four parts, and right now we only have three part leaders, so it... You know it. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3. I'm looking for a fourth. If after we finish...
We got
finish,
all right here ready to lead
okay.
us to the fourth.
And after I teach it, then we will do it in parts. So the first line... I'll come down here. The first line is sing and rejoice. It sounds like this. Sing and rejoice. We sing that.
Sing and rejoice.
Thank you. We have this great gift of musical talent in the congregation, and sometimes I think that lets us in the congregation, you know, shine not quite as brightly as we could when we're singing. So Pat and Doug are going to be introducing some round singing as we go through the fall to try to help us rediscover our congregational singing voices as well. So thank you so much for getting us started. The words for our unison chalice lighting can be found printed in your order of service and projected right up here. And would Dakota Jimenez please come forward to help us light the chalice? Thank you. First, you want to get a little flame off there. Good. We light this chalice to remind ourselves to treat all people kindly, because they are our brothers and sisters, to take good care of the earth, because it is our home, to live lives full of goodness and love, because that is how we will become the best people we can be. Thank you so much, Dakota, Marilyn, and I will hand that off to you for your story for all ages.
Anyone who wants to see the picture needs to come down front.
It's a book that's David's book that I borrowed from him, and it's called Something Special. We used to read this when he was younger. And it's by David MacPhail. Everyone in Sam's family could do something special, except for Sam. Sam's sister, Sarah, played the piano. Sam loved to watch her fingers fly over the keys. But when Sam sat down to play, it wasn't the same. "You must have stone fingers, Sam," said Sarah. Sam's sister, Flo, played first base. She hardly ever missed a catch. Sam could watch her play for hours. He wanted to play baseball, too, but he couldn't catch a thing. "Butterfingers," said Flo. Sam's brother Eugene was a computer whiz. He really knew how to make that computer hum. "Let me try," begged Sam. But when Sam touched the computer, it screamed. And so did Eugene. Sam's father was a wonderful cook. Not only did everything taste good, it looked beautiful too. Once Sam helped cook dinner, but nobody was hungry. Sam's mother carved wooden birds. Sam thought they looked almost alive. He wished he could carve birds too, but he was too young for sharp knives. "Maybe Grandma will teach me to knit," thought Sam. "She makes it look so easy." But it wasn't. The magician on TV made the disappearing egg trick look easy, too. But the trick didn't work for Sam, no matter how many times he tried it. You think he went through a lot of eggs trying that? Even Sam's dog, Fred, could do something special. "I can do that," Sam said. But he couldn't. "What else can I try?" Sam wondered. He walked down to the pond to see the ducks. The birds were singing. "Maybe I can sing," he thought. But not even the birds would listen. Sam went to talk to his mother. She was trying to paint a duck's feathers. "I just can't get it right," she exclaimed. "Maybe it should be greener," said Sam, "like the ducks in the pond." "Show me," said Mother. "Why, that's perfect," Mother said. "This is fun," Sam said. "May I paint a picture?" "That apple looks good enough to eat," said his father. Next, Sam painted a picture of Sarah with her flying fingers and one of Flo catching a fly ball. "It looks just like you, Flo," said Sarah. Then Sam painted a picture of Eugene and his computer with all its zaps and zips. Sam's family thought that being able to paint was something special. And I can't get the page turned. And so did Sam. So, Sam made a lot of different choices and tried a lot of different things. What do you think would have happened if he had made the choice to just quit trying? Yeah, he would never have found out that he could paint, would he? What else do you think that if he had, let's say that he decided he was, even though he wasn't very good at playing the piano, what if he had decided he was going to try and continue to practice? What do you think might have happened? He might have been better at the piano. And how about if he had decided to continue trying to cook? Yeah, you think eventually his family would eat his food? Maybe. But every day, we have a lot of different choices to make. This morning, Who picked out your clothes that you wore, you're wearing here? Did you pick out your own clothes? Yeah, and you all look pretty well put together. What other choices did you make this morning? If you're going to eat breakfast or not. And it's always best to start the day with breakfast. And when it was story time, what choice did you make? To listen? To come up here so you could see the pictures? Well, what I would like you to think about the rest of today is, what are all the choices you make? Because you make many, many different choices all throughout the day, and every week, and every month. And that's what Jeremy's going to talk about later in his sermon, is the choices that we have. So now, did you have something you wanted to add?
Well, yesterday, I had two breakfasts.
Oh, did you? So does that mean you didn't need to eat one today? No? Okay, so now we're going to sing you to class. Thank you.
Before we do that. I have one request for all the kids. Could you please walk on the sidewalk because the soil is sort of damp and soft and not good to walk on? Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
At this point, I invite you to stand up and greet those around you and give a special warm welcome to people who are new attenders or visitors today.
So as a community, it is also our practice when we gather to share the events that mark our lives. These aren't announcements, but the things we carry on our heavy hearts or the joys that are just leaping out that we want to share with this group. But as I said earlier, before we start that piece, we're going to have a moment. I'm going to light this candle. We're going to have a candle of interconnectedness to really think about all the stuff that maybe didn't affect us in this room directly this week. But there's a lot going on out in this world that we want to make sure is on our minds explicitly. So I'm going to light this. We're going to have about a minute of silence, and I just ask that you speak into that silence whatever word, whatever thought, whatever place is on your heart. And I will start just by saying we are worried about all our brothers and sisters in Nairobi, Kenya, who are still waiting to be relieved from a terror situation that's going on there. And I invite you all to speak whatever you have brought into this room as well. This is why we have communities like this. We need them so desperately in this world. Thank you for having the courage to continue to share your journey with us, and I hope we can continue to companion you as best we can. For all that has been spoken into this room, I am so grateful that there are people who care enough to continue to gather and support each other as I continue to see happen here over and over again. It is beautiful. The hard stuff is not going to stop coming, but having people to move through it with is the only thing we can really hope for. So thank you for being that for each other, for me. With that being said, I welcome you all to rise as you're willing or able and join us in our hymn of reflection. It's number 15, 1-5 in the gray hymnal, The Lone Wild Bird. It might be somewhat of a new one for some of us. Pat will play it once through, yeah, and then we'll join in. Thank you. In a time long past, there was an old monk. He was a wise, wise old monk. He had spent many decades in meditation, learning from the greatest masters of his time, and he had even indeed attained a level of enlightenment, this great wise monk. And so he was trusted to oversee a monastery high up on a mountain, full of the hustle and bustle of monks learning under his tutelage, meditating and studying earnestly. And of course, especially being an enlightened monk, he wasn't supposed to pick favorites, but he did. He had favorites. And his favorite of all was this 8-year-old boy who had come to them from his family as a gift from that family when he was just 4 years old. And this boy had just taken to the life there so beautifully. He loved meditation, even from a young age. He loved studying and sitting at the master's feet and hearing his tales, picking up what wisdom he could. And this morning, the wise old monk was walking through the courtyard when who should he encounter but his favorite, this 8-year-old boy. And as he stooped to greet him, he saw reflected in his face in that moment, you and I would have missed it not being enlightened like he was, but he saw that this boy had only 3 months to live. He knew it right then. He could read it on his face. So in love with this boy, he wanted him to just be surrounded by those who loved him most, and so he said, boy, you have done so much wonderful work here. I'd really like you to take a vacation. I'd like you to go see your family, spend some time with them. Don't be in a hurry. Half a year if you need it. Go and visit your family. So the boy, assuming this is part of his training, is happy to go see his family. It's been years. So he leaves. Time passes, days go by, weeks turn into months, a half a year rolls through. And one morning again, this wise old monk is walking through the courtyard, and who should be there but this now 9-year-old child who should be dead? He saw it on his face, he knew. Of course, he was thrilled to see him. He stopped and greeted him joyfully, and he said, boy, please tell me of your journey since I last saw you. And he began talking about his trip down this mountain through other villages he had not known before. He met nice, friendly people. He went over peaks and down valleys, crossed rivers and streams. And one day he came to the stream that was flooding. It was rising, had already overturned his banks, and he needed to cross this river to get to his family. He was close now. And he knew the current was strong and it was deep, but he could get across it. He was strong enough, he was sure-footed enough that he could get across this river, and he began to wade across it. And when he was about halfway through, he noticed there was a little island in the middle of the river that was soon going to be covered by the rising river, and it was covered in ants. Ants that were panicking because they knew what was coming. They knew they didn't have long to live. Well, this boy was so moved by compassion for these little ants that he waded back out the river backwards again. He worked until he could find a big tree trunk that he could lie all the way from the side of the river onto that little island. And he had to stand in the water, bracing it to hold that big piece of wood. But he did it long enough, hours in that cold water, so that every ant could cross from that little island to safety on the land. And as the monk heard the boy telling this story, he knew this is why he had been given more time, that this compassion he had shown for the littlest amongst us had changed his fate, that he would now live a long life. Now, this is a tale that I first heard when I was living over in Nepal, and I found it again recently in a collected set of stories called Thus I Have Heard, Buddhist Parables and Stories. And it kind of represents the idea, at least in most Western philosophy, but in Eastern too, that dominated for so much of our human history, that our lives were not really ours to control. That there was something else that we could maybe do some compassionate acts that would be seen by a god or by a benevolent universe, but that's what ultimately was in charge. There were causes beyond our imagination that truly controlled the world. This is how humans were for a long time. Homeric Greek, of course, very much believed in fate over freedom. If you look at the original Greek, and good luck if you can do that, at Plato and Aristotle, there is nothing in any of their works that could really be translated as the term free will. Just wasn't there yet. There's some blips and blurps through history where some people play with that idea, but it's really not until the 4th century, and that guy you probably heard of before, Augustine, that we really get this modern Western concept of free will. And he was, of course, trying to solve a pretty big problem that Christianity was facing. They had this idea of a God that was omnipotent, that knew and controlled everything, and was also good. So then how do you account for the evil that's in the world? And so Augustine, trying to solve that theological problem, said, well, it's the free will God gave humans. That's where this stuff entered into the game. It's not God. God is perfect. God is good. God wants good for us, but we have free will. And from the 4th century on, pretty much every philosopher has had to grapple with those two camps. Are they going to be someone who really sees this world as being free will, or there's a larger fate at work somehow? And there are two main camps that have really existed. There's a group called the compatibilists who believe that there could be some level of cause beyond our own and we could still have free will, right? There could be some level of control outside of what we have control over, but free will was still compatible with that. There was another camp that said, no, it's either totally free or it's not free will, right? If I don't have 110% complete control over all my thoughts and actions, that's not free will. And that's kind of, you know, people went back and forth, and some really intelligent people spun out ideas on both sides of that. And then, in 1848, Phineas Gage blasted a rod through his head. Anyone know Phineas Gage? Yeah, psych majors would probably run into him, anyone who went further than that with it. So this guy, Phineas Gage, he ran a gang that using that in the best sense of the words, put in our railroads. They built the actual tracks that the railroad would later go on. I'm getting a nod from Drew. That's always a good thing. And so he was the foreman of the gang, and what his real job was is he had this metal rod, and when they had to remove rocks, they would put a charge in there, some dynamite, and he would tamp it down. And they're supposed to put a little sand in there on top of the charge so that no sparks would happen, right? You can imagine why that would be important when you're laying down explosives. Well, this day they forgot to put the sand in there. This is a real story, unfortunately. So he's leaning over that, tamping it down, and a spark happens, and that rod blasts straight through his head. Kind of right under his eye socket, and straight out the top of his head, about another 30 feet behind him, covered in parts of Phineas Gage's frontal lobe. Right through his frontal lobe. Now, the amazing thing is, not only did he not die, within a couple of months, he appeared to be completely healthy. He could walk and talk, interact just like a normal person. He did have somewhat of a hole in his head. But something really changed about Phineas Gage. Before, he had been known as a really well-disciplined man, someone that you put in charge of a whole group of guys working out in the middle of nowhere on some tough stuff. He was known to be good with his money, a polite guy, someone you wanted to be around. Well, after this accident, as I said, he could still walk and talk and everything, but he was a different man. Swore all the time. If he got $5, he spent it as quick as he could on alcohol. He was rude to people. 180 degrees, a different person. Now, doctors rushed to study this man. I mean, he was like the first living experiment because they had these mushy brains and they didn't really know what part did what. Well, they knew now, and there's been a lot of experiments since then, that the frontal lobe of your brain controls so much of your impulse, you know, that stuff that really changed about him. And it turns out, if you change the brain, you change the person. And we've seen this a ton of times since. Another story of a man who, similarly, a great father, a great husband, starts just being a horrible drunk, horrible to his family, gets arrested, Well, it turns out he had a tumor growing on his brain, and as soon as they removed that tumor, he's right back to the guy they knew and loved. Change the brain, change the person. So what does that mean for free will, right? I mean, do we really have it? Is it just some function of electronic stuff that's bleeping and blipping in our heads? So there's been a lot of experiments on our brains over the last 150 years, but especially over the last few decades as they get these fMRI machines going and they can really see in real time kind of what's lighting up and where. A new metaphor has kind of evolved from science about what is going on with our conscious mind, and I'm going to read this a couple times because it's a pretty interesting metaphor. Our conscious mind is like a monkey riding a tiger of subconscious decisions and actions, frantically making up stories about being in control. Our conscious mind is a monkey riding a tiger of subconscious ideas and decisions, frantically making up stories about being in control. That's really what free will is all about, right? We control the body, mind, the whole thing. I do this right now, not because it looks cool, but because I want to show you I have free will. Why would someone do that otherwise? So in 1970, Dr. Benjamin Libet, a psychologist over at UCSF, right in our neighborhood, wired up people's brains, and he asked them to just move randomly. There was a whole lot of stuff set up in front of them that they could flip or push, or they could just go like this. He just wanted them to start doing random movements, nothing that they were told to do, nothing in a specific order, just move. And what he found was that the brain signals associated with movement occurred a half a second before the volunteer was conscious of making the choice to do that movement. Okay? So about a half a second before the volunteer was conscious of making a decision, the decision already looked pretty made. It already happened. The order of the brain activity was motion, then decision. The monkey is frantically making up stories that it is in charge. So the decision to act was an illusion. The monkey was making up a story about what the tiger had already done. Right? And another way it was described is there's two tips of the iceberg that we see, okay? We see the thought and the action, and we draw a conclusion that the thought is what led to the action. But it's just a conclusion and maybe not the right one. The subconscious mind is where a lot of the action happens in our decision-making process. I saw an article this week about how grocery stores position things at certain heights, they make certain smells bigger, they even play certain music, so that you go in there with a list, right? Your free will has created a list of sugar and butter and bacon twice on there, and you know, chicken, and you go in there and you start filling up your cart with that stuff, but then you find out when you get to the cash register, there's like a lot of stuff that wasn't on that list. Am I the only one that happens to? Because they know, and so this article actually said, if you want to stick to your list, one of the best things you can do is wear headphones and listen to some kind of fast-paced music while you're in there. Just kind of, yeah, don't even pay attention to any of your surroundings and just get that list done and get at it. Because they know what they're doing. Commercials use certain colors or sounds to make it seem more appealing or draw you in. It's not your conscious mind that likes that thing. They're tricking you. Or one way to think about it. You know, every relationship you have, every person you meet, you bring all this information to. Like, this person kind of looks like your grandmother, and you love your grandmother so much. And so you just, before you even heard him say a word, you just kind of like that person. So much of the decisions that we make are not because of that conscious way that we think of free will happening. It's just not working like that. So where does that leave us? Are we just kind of like meat puppets? I hope not. I mean, I think you have to admit there's just no question that a lot of this stuff is predetermined and happening at the subconscious level. I even read this amazing article about how the experiences of your ancestors affect how your DNA and genes express themselves now in your body. How about that? Grandpa or grandma has a trauma or a great love affair or something. And that gets into your gene expression now. Not because you wanted it to, it just did. So a lot of the decisions we're making are happening at that subconscious level. You just have to kind of accept that. So I think the question becomes, you know, there's still a lot of space for free will. They leave a lot of space here, but you got to learn how to claim it. It's not just going to come to you. You know, the subconscious mind is kind of the place where all your baggage lives. All the stuff you don't want to touch or look at or feel. It's where a lot of that stuff lives. You know, if you had a family system that had certain patterns and you haven't grappled with those, that's where they live still until you deal with them. Inherited archetypes. So many triggers for the ways we react in situations live there. And if you just kind of leave your subconscious alone and you don't do much work on it, it's going to keep working itself out in ways you don't even know. So it looks like, you know, I always imagined that free will was something that I was using right now, in the present moment, that I was actualizing my free will. That's how it worked. But it's looking more like, well, let me share this thought from a Tufts professor. You know, I grew up in the Boston area where we were told that people who were tough were really smart. So I am predetermined to think that this guy is really a smart person. So I wrote this down when I read it. Maybe not a free decision. All the varieties of free will worth having, he says, we have. Through the process of reflection, we have the power to veto our decisions. You know, you might really want that chocolate cake. You might order it every time you go out to dinner, even though you know you shouldn't be eating it. And you just kind of let your subconscious mind just roll through. You could veto that decision. In fact, it's really our power to reflect back that's where our free will really lives. It's not in this present moment like we think it is. Not really in the way that we had imagined it, where we're making these decisions. The real power of free will is in looking back, which really nothing else does. No other species alive really has the ability to do that. That's what makes us different. The ability to reflect. And he says, actually, evolution, history, and culture have endowed us with feedback systems that give us the unique ability to reflect and think things over and to imagine the future. That's where free will lies. You know, I was walking in here today, and I was, you know, remarked a couple times we had that beautiful rain yesterday for a couple hours, and I was amazed how already there's so much green stuff popping out up here. Now, that was just laying right under the surface the whole time waiting for that water, and that's kind of how I imagine that free will is waiting for you not to act in the present moment in a certain way. That ship might have sailed already. That tiger's already run away from you, and you're making up stories. But you can sit here and reflect in very real ways on what you've done. You can work on all those things lying in your subconscious mind with your friends here at Mission Peak, with your therapist, with your spiritual director. You can try to take the power away from those things so that in that moment it isn't your subconscious mind jumping up and doing something. That's where free will lies. It's waiting for you. Right under the surface. But you got to do something to get it. And I invite you to do just that. Now I invite Pat to play us a little more music.
Thank you, Pat. Here at Mission Peak, we give of our time, our energy, our talents, our wisdom, our care, our fears. And another way that we can give is with the offering, which goes to meet the mission of our church, our congregation. So I invite the ushers to come take the offering at this time. Thank you, Pat, and thank you for your generosity, and we pledge to be good stewards with the money that you have given. Now, if you'd please stand as you are willing and able and join us in the closing hymn. It's number 114, Forward Through the Ages.